And now, for the Financial Times ranked top investment advisor, Hanson McLain. It's Hanson McLain's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson. Pat McLain is off this weekend. He's with his family, I think back in New York. Interesting family vacation this time of year. But anyway, that's where Pat is with. So he's there with his family. And I am here with you this weekend, doing this by myself. Actually, got a fantastic program lined up later in the program. Of course, we'll be taking calls as normal. Later in the program, we have Hanson McLain's Chief Investment Officer, David Schauer, is going to be joining us. We're going to be talking a little bit about the current markets and what's happened lately, what to expect going forward. So David Schauer is going to be joining us here at Hanson McLain's Money Matters coming up in the bit of the program. And if you're turning this program, and if you are somewhat new to this show, this program's not new. We've been around doing the program for more than 20 years, broadcast out of KFBK in Sacramento, California. We've been on KGO in the Bay Area for about a year. And we've been broadcasting at Kogo in San Diego, The Patriot in Los Angeles, and KOA in Denver since the beginning of this year. And, of course, many of you also listen to us at our podcast, Hanson McLain's Money Matters, available both at our website, moneymatters.com, and available at iTunes. So, anyway, glad you are with us as we're going to be talking about some financial matters and taking your calls. And if you'd like to join the program, if you got a question for us, for me today, to be part of Hanson McLain's Money Matters, a question regarding anything financial related. So perhaps it has to do with something going on in your financial life. You're wondering if a certain type of investment makes sense. Maybe someone's recommended you make a move somewhere. Perhaps you're considering refinancing a piece of property. Maybe you're looking at retirement. Maybe it's dealing with an asset allocation decision. Wondering if you have too much in stocks or too little in stocks. Whatever the case may be, to join the program, the contact number here is 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-2-HANSON to be part of the program. Or numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. And I'd love to take your call here and answer your question. And I'll tell you, it's an interesting time. There's an article I was reading this very last week. Where's this article? It has to do with college costs and loans. These aren't loans from for kids taken out. These are loans that parents are taking out to help their kids go to school. And here's why this is relevant, particularly for me. I've got two kids. I've got a 20-year-old in college, and I've got an 18-year-old who is right now in that window. This last week, he's been receiving his acceptance and decline letters from colleges. Now, full disclosure, I was not the best student in high school. A friend of mine the other day said, yeah, I had one C plus in high school. And I said, really? I said, me too. I had one C plus. I said, the rest were C's or C minuses. That was about me in high school. Was not very motivated. Of course, I figured it out, finished college, then went on to the College for Financial Planning, got a certified financial planner and all that sort of stuff. But my son is, and for whatever reason, is the opposite and has been very studious. So he's applied to all these colleges. So we're getting college acceptance letters back and getting decline letters back. And some of them come with offers of assistance, financial assistance, where you've got such and such scholarship, $5,000 a year, $20,000 a year. And I remember when the first one I got is some early thing. It was like a huge dollar amount, $20,000 a year. I think the letter said $80,000 scholarship. I'm like, wow, $80,000. That sounds like a free ride these days. Well, not quite so much. Matter of fact, if we look at what college expenses have been, and this is what's interesting, because this is where our tomorrow's generation, this is what they're going through, these expensive colleges. And if we look at the amount of student debt right now, at the end of last year is $1.2 trillion in student debt. Now, if you're listening, think, wait a minute, I'm retired. This doesn't pertain to me. Or my kids are already through college. It doesn't pertain to me. I think it pertains to all of us as Americans, because the amount of debt our young people are being saddled with and how they're going to get through this is amazing. So today, student loan is $1.2 trillion in debt. This was up 10 years ago. It was more than doubled in the last 10 years. Matter of fact, it's more than doubled since the Obama administration. It is just amazing to see how much these student loans are going. If we look at the average cost, annual cost for a four-year private college, this includes both room and board, it's climbed 53% this last decade, up 53% It's almost $44,000 a year for the average private college. At public colleges, the cost is up 61%, and it's about $20,000 a year to send your kid to a public college. You're thinking, oh, I'll just send them to state school. We're still looking at $20,000 a year, $80,000. So what's been happening? We're seeing a lot of colleges are recommending that rather than the student take out the student loan, the parents have the loan. Now, as the financial advisor for doing this 25 years at Hanson McLean, we've seen a number of situations where people have rated their 401k plans to help their colleges. I mean, their kids go to college. We've seen people refinance their house to help their kids go through college. Sometimes these things are fine. I've seen people where it really put their own life in jeopardy, financial life in jeopardy, by paying for their kids' colleges. But we're seeing these universities recommend oftentimes to the students that, hey, don't take out the student loan. Why don't we have the parents take out the loan? Now, why are they doing this? Because college scorecards will list what the average student debt is, the median student debt for their graduates. So if they have the debt out in the parent's name rather than the child's name, it looks like these kids are graduating college without much debt. Well, they might have a tremendous amount of debt. It might just be in mom and dad's name. And that's what we're seeing a big push towards, where these universities are recommending parents take out loans in their own name. And I tell you that it's an interesting thing. I've seen so many people go into financial hawk, get into financial trouble to get their kids so their kids can go through a good college. I got to tell you, it seems to me that after the first couple years of workplace, where someone went to college probably doesn't make that big of a difference. Matter of fact, I'm an employer. We have about 70 employees here at Hanson McLean Advisors. Where somebody went to school, now we hire some new college grads and train them up, but other people that join us, where they went to school, it's not nearly as important as what they've been doing with their life and what their skill set is and what we believe they could be trained to do going forward. What school they went to is not really that important. And when I see people, unfortunately, I've seen clients of Hanson McLean do this, where they take out large balances from their retirement savings, or refinance their home, take a big chunk of cash out of their home that they can't really afford so that their kids can go to these schools and live in the dorm and have the whole college life, I question it. And if you're in a situation where you're sitting there and maybe you're listening to this right now and your kids are going through the same thing, getting acceptance letters and whatnot, you really need to think about, is this worth it from a financial standpoint? Michael Gladwell, Michael Gladwell wrote David and Goliath and The Tipping Point. There's a fantastic chapter in David and Goliath on college costs and et cetera. This actually goes a little more deeper on this. But I was just reminded this week, and I thought I'd bring it up on the show because I know that there's other people out there that are tempted or feel an obligation even to pay for your child's education. Look, you might have some obligation to help your child launch well in life, but sending them off to a private school where they don't have to work and can live in the dorms and go to keggers on Thursday and Friday nights, that's not really your obligation. Personally, I went through junior college. I trimmed trees through junior college. I actually ended up with a little tree trimming business. I climbed trees. I had a couple little employees work for me. And I got to tell you, I probably learned more in the full disclosure here. It did take me 4 years to get through junior college. But I probably learned more during that 4 years of having a tree trimming business, things about business, customer service. The area that I lived in was an area where the town adjacent to us was a very wealthy community. And I learned that being prompt on appointments, how much that mattered to people. And just I'd learned a great deal about that tree trimming business. And then I was able to sell this little business to go up and go away to college and finish college my last couple of years. My point is, I wasn't sent away to some great four-year university, and it seemed to me that things have just worked out just fine. And if you're in a situation where you're sitting there scratching your head thinking, how are we going to pay for Johnny's education? Actually, no one's named Johnny anymore. Trevor's education. Ashley's education. If you're looking at trying to figure out how to cover those costs, maybe you don't want to put your retirement in jeopardy. And maybe it's okay if they go a less expensive route. And if you're a grandparent listening to this and someone's tugging on you saying, hey, Can you cough up some dough so we can send Trevor and Ashley to college? If you've got the finances and you want to do it, that's fine. Great. And frankly, I had a 529 plan set up for my child since the day both of them were born, and said, I'd like for you to be able to think about going to school wherever. And I've instilled that in them. And we've got the money set aside. If we didn't have the money set aside, I'd probably be talking about a junior college or something along those lines. So I know at this program, Hanson McLean's Money Matters, we talk about a variety of financial topics. We don't always just talk about the stock market, and we don't always spend that much time on student loans. And we certainly, as much as I'd like to talk about, I'm not going to spend much time more time on it during this program, but I think a lot of the cost in college today is a result of excess money, low-cost capital to students and parents in the form of subsidized loans, federal government loans. The more money that flows to something, prices tend to go up, basic supply and demand. So we've had all these government loans, it seemed like almost free loans, so easy to get. 18-year-old just signs, really easy to get these loans. No expectation to repay them or anything. And suddenly they've got a big wad of cash to go into these colleges with a big wad of cash, and the colleges somehow find expenses to continue to jack up their prices. That's why. Why else would college costs? This is a time when technology should be displaced in a lot of things, right? All these online courses. Instead, over the last 10 years, private colleges, the costs have increased 53% in the last decade. I don't know what else is up 53% last decade when you have inflation very low. And for in-state colleges, up 61%. It's the same time when our most tax rates are going up as well. But for whatever reason, our college costs are gone. Anyway, something to think about. So we're going to take a break here in a moment. We come back, we'll start taking some of your calls. Love to hear from you and answer any questions you might have. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, it's 1-888-2-HANSON. Again, that's 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. Also in the program today, David Schauer, Hanson McLean's Chief Investment Officer, will be joining us. And for those of you who both are Hanson McLean clients or those that have received our newsletter, you've been receiving David Schauer's quarterly updates, or the video update that we do on the markets. And, of course, we have one coming out this week as well. But we'll hear from David Schauer talking about what's happened this last quarter and what we might expect going forward. So, anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We'll be right back.
To have your questions answered by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, visit their website at moneymatters.com or call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Taking the financially complex and making it simple, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters at 1-888-2-HANSON.
That's right. We do try to take some of the complex and make it simple. I have found a couple things. 25 years of doing this, I've noticed, I've learned a couple things. One is the majority of people really don't like dealing with finances. Now, I know for those that are junkies to this program, and I know there are some because I get your emails and whatnot, you think, how can that be? How can people not enjoy dealing with finances? But I know there's a large portion of the population that dealing with financial matters is kind of like a necessary evil. I had a client tell me once that they viewed coming to see me right up there with going to see their dentist, right? Now, well, thanks a lot. Now, I always enjoy the results when I go to my dentist. They keep my teeth clean. I don't necessarily enjoy going to the dentist, and I like to think that discussing one's finances isn't as painful as getting a root canal, but I know that there's some people that feel that way. One of the things at Hanson McLean here that we've tried to do is take some of these things that might seem complex and put them into some basic everyday language so that people can understand. And we try to make this program a little bit informative and entertaining as well. I know McLean's not here to rip on me because he's always ripping on me. I don't know. I was looking at McLean family vacations are hilarious because they've got 4 kids within 5 years of each other. And I think their oldest now is 20. Yeah, their oldest is like from 20 to 15 or 20 to 16 even, something like that. And the McLean family has taken over, took New York this weekend or something. But you remember, he went on they took the family to a cruise in Europe, and they came home early. I got noticed that he was coming home early. What do you mean? How do you come home early? So, we were done. What do you mean you were done? I literally, like, partway through the cruise on one of the ports, they like said, we're done. We're out of here. They changed the flights and got home, which I thought was quite hilarious. But from the sounds of things, I think the McLeans have survived the entire time in New York. Anyway, we're going to take some calls here at Hanson McLean and talk to you about some money questions that you might have. And to join the show, 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-242-6766. And I might note, if you call, and sometimes it takes a while to answer or you hear a busy signal, call us back because I know we get a lot of calls through and we'd love to take your call and help you out as well. So we'll start off here with Paul. Paul, you're with Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Hey, Scott. Enjoy your program always.
And well, thank you.
I really appreciated your comments about working through college.
Did you work through college, go to college?
Constantly. I was working as a painter in a macaroni factory. I worked in the summertime on construction on the roads in Minnesota. I've done just about everything. And was an ROTC cadet at the same time.
Oh, is that right?
Through 4 years of college.
My son is considering being an ROTC cadet.
I highly recommend it.
Yeah, that's what. Anyway, how can we help you today?
Well, I'm turning 70 and a half in a few days here, and the requirement for minimum required distribution is coming up, and. What I'm concerned about is what to do with this money. I don't have the real need for it right now, and my wife is going to be in the same boat here in about a year and a half. And, you know, we've got enough money. I work right now as an independent consultant after I retired from the military. And so I'm trying to figure out a smart way to invest this money in the IRA.
Now,
and I think the sooner the better.
If you are an independent consultant, are you self-employed there?
Yes.
So you actually have, how much do you have ballpark in your retirement plan?
In my IRA, I've got about $300K.
Okay. And how about your wife?
About the same.
And how much longer do you think you'll do some part-time consulting?
Till I'm not able to do it. I enjoy it a lot.
You know, it's interesting. I hear more and more from people at your stage in life that are continuing to work, doing some sort of work, because you enjoy it and you find engagement and purpose and meaning, some of those things. So here's a couple things you can think about. One thing you could do is you can set up, because you're self-employed, you can set up what's called a solo K, a 401K that only has one participant, really low cost actually. And because it's I take that back. You're more than a 5% owner of a company. If this wasn't your company, you worked for somebody else, you could actually take your retirement plan, roll it into the company's 401k, and delay distributions until you actually retired. And I start going down that path, and I realize that there's a provision that says if you're more than a 5% owner, it's not going to work for you. So forget about that. So you're kind of stuck with having the taxable distribution, and it's about roughly 4% or so. So there's going to be about 11 grand that's going to be taxable to you this year, whether you like it or not. Technically, you've got until April 1st next year to take your first distribution. If you waited until next year, though, you'd have to take two distributions next year. So it'd be about 22 grand next year. So you probably don't want to do that. What a lot of people do in your situation is just simply set up an account at whatever firm you've got your IRA, set up a brokerage account, and have that dollar amount just transferred over to that brokerage account and have the taxes paid along the way. So if, let's say it's $11,000 and maybe you get 25%, you figure it's going to go to taxes. You have the 25% automatically sent to the tax man, have the rest of the dollars go into your brokerage account and keep them invested that way. And you can actually continue a similar allocation you've got. What we typically recommend, though, is when you've got money that is outside of the retirement account, you want to pay attention to the taxation of that, right? So if let's go out 10 years from now, maybe you're going to continue working as a consultant for the next 10 years. Sounds like you might, right? I mean, people are living longer and longer, and if you're enjoying it, and as long as you've got your health, so it could be many, many years. And as we start drawing down the IRA and building up investments on the outside, you want the most tax-efficient investments on the outside. And if your portfolio, let's say your portfolio has some portion of stocks and some portion of bonds, what I would recommend is have the most tax efficient stock portion of your portfolio, have that portion being distributed, and have, so let's say it's $11,000 you have to take out, have that $11,000 in a brokerage account, but maybe have that invested in a in an S&P 500 index fund, for example. It's going to spin off very little in the way of taxable dividends and capital gain distributions, and then adjust your IRA such that, so you took that into consideration. So maybe have slightly less equities in your IRA.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
Yeah, it does. My IRA is basically based on a S&P 500 index fund as it is. Another thought.
100% of it is?
Well, a good bit of it, yes.
Wow. I mean, long term, that's probably going to give you the greatest results, but most people can't stomach the ups and downs of it.
Yeah, well, you know, I've always looked at the long haul. That tends to be, you know, if you look at historically, the stock market has done very well. And I'm not real interested, quite frankly, in adding to that. But here's another thought I wanted to run by you. We built a brand new house about 10 years ago, and we've got about 8 years left on the mortgage. And I was sort of thinking that throwing money against the principal.
Yes and no. Normally, it would be like a no-brainer. Absolutely do it. But considering you're 70 years old and you've owned stocks for a number of years and you've got confidence and you talk about the long term and you're thinking the long term, if we look long term, you're going to be better off probably owning the S&P 500 index fund than you are paying down that mortgage. Odds are. That's no guarantee, though. So if on the other hand, you say, well, if my consulting gig ends, and I use the phrase gig only because that's what kind of they're talking about. Part-time work, this is the gig economy. I mean gig in a good way. If you're thinking about, well, if my consulting ends, I'd like to get rid of that mortgage payment. If that's the case, then I do like the idea of taking your RMD and just throwing it against the mortgage. Because you're already paying tax on it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So if you like the idea of having your home paid off, then I say it's a great place to take it because you're stuck taking it out of your IRA. But you're really not stuck selling stocks. So if it turns out that you're going to take your required minimum distribution the latter part of this year, and it's a time when the market's off, you can still maintain your stock exposure. You're not necessarily forced to sell the stocks. You're just forced to get the securities outside of the IRA.
Yeah. Well, what I was hoping to do, you know, of course, is maintain liquidity. And if for some reason my health went south and I stopped doing consulting, then I wouldn't have to continue on with paying against the principal of the mortgage. And, you know, I could use that money to do whatever I needed to do with it. We normally keep around $20,000, you know, in liquid funds.
Well, then I'm a personal fan of having a home paid off in retirement. I think it just, for most people, it just takes some stress away. Most people, there's usually one in a marriage too, for married couples, that is pretty adamant about having it paid off. And my experience is I've never seen anyone upset that they paid their house off. No one's ever said, doggone it, Scott, I shouldn't have paid my house off. I should have kept that investment instead. If your goal is to die with as much money as possible, then maybe don't pay it off. Is your goal to have some financial peace? Then I like the concept of having the required minimum distributions come out and go apply it against the mortgage.
Yeah. Yeah, well, another thing that, you know, would be a concern about that is for, you know, tax purposes, I still have some, you know, money, the tax deduction.
Yeah, but the tax deduction is so little these days as interest rates are so low. The tax deduction just becomes smaller and smaller. That's one of the things with the refinance. The refinance is good, but as the interest rates get lower, our tax deductions become less and less. So anyway, hey, Paul, glad you called. Hope this was of help to you. We're going to take a quick break. If you'd like to join Hanson McLean, have a question for us, to join us, it's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To join the show, call us at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766. one of the longest-running financial programs. Here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson here with you. Pat McLean is off this weekend, goofing around doing something, and we're going to go back to the calls here in a moment. Eric, you are next, and I will grab your call in here in just a second. Before we do that, though, there has been something that I've been waiting to see for the last number of years, and it's finally coming out. And here's what this is. Here's what I'm passionate about. And I am passionate about reducing conflicts of interest between financial advisors and the people they serve. I'm passionate about brokers disclosing everything that's going on in their financial lives and disclosing whatever conflicts of interest might exist so that investors can have a clear-eyed view and make wise choices. Our industry, the financial services industry, tends to recruit their financial advisors, and they were called stockbrokers at one point in time. Now they call themselves financial advisors. They tend to recruit financial advisors by poaching from one another. XYZ firm will convince a broker to leave some other firm. You see it all the time. And if you had your broker's with a large firm, there's a good chance that they've switched firm at some point in time over the years. And they'll do this by offering a broker a big upfront paycheck. And the paycheck is typically in the form of a forgivable loan. So they say, hey, come join our firm. We're going to give you a seven-figure check. We're going to give you $1 million if you come over. Oh, by the way, if you come over, you got to bring at least a certain percentage of your clients. But if you bring a certain percentage of your clients over here and you generate enough fees and commissions, we're going to forgive that loan over a period of time. Oftentimes, it's 5 years or 7 years or 9 years. Oftentimes, it's 7 years. We'll forgive that loan over a period of time. So you're a broker working for some Wall Street firm, and some recruiter calls you and said, hey, if you'd like to go across the street, we'll give you $1 million cash. All you got to do is make sure your clients follow you as you come over here. So if that's what's happened with your broker, there's a good chance that he or she got a big compensation for doing so. Now, I have a problem, first of all, with the compensation. I think the industry should ban that sort of thing, because you want to talk about putting someone at a conflict. If they don't get enough clients to join them, they got to pay that loan back. Then as time goes on, if they don't generate enough fees and commissions, they got to pay the loan back. So they're talking to clients thinking, oh, my gosh, I better make sure I generate some fees off this client. Otherwise, I'm going to have to pay some money back to my employer. Well, unfortunately, it's still allowed, but at least we just saw in the last week or two here, the Securities and Exchange Commission approves this broker compensation disclosure rule. They're calling it educational communication. So what this is, and this still isn't fully adopted, but the Securities and Exchange Commission finally approved the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority to implement this. And this will require anyone that transfers firms to send out an educational piece that will state a number of things. One will state, here's what the compensation I will be receiving for bringing you over. Actually, it's not even the full we wanted the full compensation, not even fully disclosing it, but it's going to present some conflicts of interest. Here's what you need to think about. Here's what you need to be asking your advisor. So I think this is a step in the right direction. I'd like to see this banned entirely. You've heard me talk about it before. I don't like the way the industry is structured with financial advisors at those firms. I often scratch my head and say, why are those financial advisors still at those firms? Why don't they become independent where they can reduce those conflicts a great deal? Anyway, I'm going to get off my high horse. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We're going to take calls here in a minute. 1-888-2-HANSON to join the program. And by the way, we've talked more about this at our website, moneymatters.com. We've got some great stuff at moneymatters.com. And also, David Schauer is going to be joining us in the next segment talking about the markets, our chief investment officer. But right now, Eric's been on the hold, so we're going to go to the calls here and talk with Eric. Eric, you're with Hanson McLean Advisors.
Hey, Scott. How you doing today?
Excellent. How you doing, Eric?
Good. So I got a bunch of just kind of random life questions here for you, really, that have to do with my money every day.
Okay.
I'm 40 years old. I own a house that we live in. We own a rental property that we're actually in the process of selling right now. I stock a bunch of money into my 401. I got life insurance going. And I'm just trying to figure out if I'm doing the right things.
Well, so far it sounds like you are. So
I'm putting $5 an hour into a 401A. I'm putting $8 an hour into a 401K. They're probably sitting at about 160,000 right now in my 401s.
What percentage of your pay is that you're saving?
It's about 8%, 10%.
Okay. And what do you owe on your house?
So the house that we live in right now, we owe about $285. The house that we're getting ready to sell, I want to pay this house down. I'm in construction, so I've got boom and bust time, you
yep.
know? And so I want to pay this house down, you know, maybe to like in that 110, 120 range, make it like a, you know, $800 monthly payment.
Is that why you're selling the rental?
The reason we're selling the rental is because we've had great tenants in it for the last 5 years and they have decided to leave.
Got it.
And things are up and I just don't want to roll the dice.
Got
with
it.
Tenants again.
I'm with you.
You know?
Have you calculated what your tax liability might be?
Yeah, it's going to be about $80,000.
The tax liability will be $80,000 or you'll have to, that's the gain.
No. That's what I'm going to have to pay in capital gains taxes.
You're going to have to pay $80,000 in total taxes?
Yes.
Now, that's a big tax bill. All right.
Yeah, I know.
And then you'll end up with enough to be able to pay down the mortgage to about $110,000. And is your plan to either refinance or re-amortize that loan to get your payment low?
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, I want to refinance it. You know, I'm going to leave it at a 30-year fixed, but I want to get that down to like a, you know, $600-$700 a month payment.
All right, and what do you have sitting in the bank in case suddenly you didn't have work for the next 6 months?
Right now there's probably about $12,000 in the bank.
Okay, so here's I like your plan here actually. Here's what I would consider.
Well, and that was the other thing is after we pay off the loan on the house that we're selling, pay this one way down, then we're looking at having about $70,000 in a net, you know, sitting there as a safety
for
net.
A buffer. Okay, I like that concept.
Yeah.
A couple things I would consider. One is I would on that mortgage before you refinance it. If you have a low rate, contact the bank and just see if you can re-amortize it. In other words, they'll figure out your payment just like it's a new loan today over the remaining years.
Okay.
And you might want to say. Okay. Try to have the thing paid off in 15 or 20 years. So figure out what your payments need to be and pay that amount.
Yeah. My goal is to retire in 18 years.
Okay. Then I would do it at 18. I would figure out the loan balance so that it's paid off in 18 years. And we have calculators, for example, at moneymatters.com, our website, moneymatters.com. You can use a calculator just to show you how much. So I would calculate to get that home paid off within 18 years. And then the money that you're saving is that difference between the mortgage payment, what you have been paying and what you will be paying, I would sock that extra into your retirement account.
Okay. Yeah, because I think I'm actually have an additional $2 an hour that I can put in because they just bumped up another category in our 401k. And then the other question is right now I'm only putting 50 cents an hour into my HRA. I can put up to 550 into that.
I would... Whatever you can afford to save for retirement right now, I would save. Because construction's good right now, right? Business is good.
Right, oh yeah.
So you're thinking, now's a good time to be cashing out this house, and it very well might be. Obviously, sell buy low, sell high, right? Maybe it'll go higher, maybe it won't. We don't know, but you're taking advantage of it right now. So I like your plan right here. And because times are good, you're going to have some additional cash flow. I think now's the time to be socking money into retirement. When you go through a period of lean years, that's the time when you can say, I'm just going to scale back my retirement savings. Hopefully you don't have to touch any of your reserve cash capital you've got aside. But it sounds like you're planning very prudently here. And you're planning so that another recession comes and it's not going to wipe you out.
That's my hope. the other thing that I didn't mention is I have a six-year-old. I bought a whole life policy for him as a investment, not so much as a life insurance, but just as
on his life. Or you're, I'm not a huge fan of that, by the way, but
It was for his. Maybe I wasn't very well educated, but it sounded good when I was doing it. Not so much as a, I didn't buy it as a life insurance.
Are you putting money into it?
Yeah, I put $100 a month into it.
If it were me, I would take that $100 and put it towards a 529 plan instead. This is first college, or for the future?
Just
for
future.
Yeah. The problem is, if you look at the cost associated inside a whole life policy, I mean, so much of the your $100 is just going to insurance, and if the insurance is on his life, I mean.
Yeah, it's supposed to. I can't remember all the facts to it right now, but it's supposed to, after 20 years, become self-funding and da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, I, you know what?
Have a $300,000 value when he's 32 or something.
Yeah, right.
I can't remember the facts.
Yeah, it's not
going to
be. $100 a month's not going to go 30. It's not going to go. That's the one thing in your plan, Eric, that I tend to have an issue with. And if it were me, I would get rid of that whole life policy on my kid. I would not buy a whole life policy. If I had some concern about insurable interest in the future, I'd probably get some term life insurance that could convert, but I don't think I'd have that great concern right now. Otherwise, it sounds like you're making good plans. I like your concept. I like what you're doing. I would just, during these good years, put as much money as you can into your retirement, and during the lean years, you can afford to scale back at that time. We're up against the clock. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue with some calls, and our chief investment officer will join us as well. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Get a podcast of Hanson McLean's Money Matters delivered each week to your computer or mobile device. Simply visit moneymatters.com. And now, back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
That's right, Hanson McLean back with you. And you can get a podcast of this program, as just mentioned, at moneymatters.com. And when you can just sign up for the podcast. Or you can go to iTunes, and if you search iTunes, Hanson McLean's Money Matters, and you can get our podcast there as well. David Schauer is going to be joining us in just a few minutes here. He's our chief investment officer. We're going to talk about what happened last quarter, what we expect. He's going to give us all his predictions, and he's always correct. I'm choking. Anyway, let's talk with Lee in Ukiah. Lee, you're with Hanson McLean.
Thank you, Scott, for the opportunity to benefit from your advice.
Thank you.
I'm an 82-year-old mutual fund investor, and among the funds I already have are a Target Retirement Income Fund, a Wellesley Income Fund, and the Total Stock Market Index Fund. I'm not going to mention the name of the company unless it's okay with you. I want to reduce my equity risk and portfolio volatility in part by reducing the total stock market index by about half and putting it in either of the already existing Target Retirement Income Fund or the Wellesley Income Fund. The goal is preservation of capital to pass along to my heirs, which will happen at the time of my death. And I can't imagine that that being more than 5 years away. I'm 82 and I've got a cancer history and so forth, heart problems, blah, blah, blah. Both funds roughly have about 30% in stocks and 70% in bonds. But the Wellesley is all domestic and its stocks are only those that pay dividends, which I see as a plus. But of course, there's always a but. The Target Retirement Income Fund has some foreign stocks and bonds in their mix, and that may reduce the volatility and possibly some other benefits. But throughout its entire lifespan, the Wellesley has outperformed the Target Retirement Income Fund, and the expense ratios are so close as to not be a consideration. They're only two basis points away from each other.
Yeah, so good. So a couple different things here, if I can unpack this a bit. Without speaking of the specific fund, because with thousands of funds out there, I find it makes for boring radio if I speak too much of specific funds.
I've got the last thing is a question. I got about three sentences to make the question. The question is, considering all of this garbage, why would an investor choose the lower performing Target Income Fund or bother to split the investment between the two funds and not just go totally into the Wellesley?
Well, because that's a – so on any fund, here's why sometimes you might take a fund that has lower returns. And I'm not necessarily advocating that at the moment here because you might actually benefit from a new fund. But so there it could be that the one fund had underperformed because it had foreign and the dollar has rallied a great deal lately, which had put – if you own foreign stuff and – you got to convert it back to the dollars. That's right there is a headwind. So it could be that theoretically you could have superior investments in the foreign holdings, but because the U.S. dollar has increased in value over the last number of years, that could have put a decline on the return relative to the other fund. So that in and of itself. But if you've got a fund that is higher percentage in dividend paying stocks and designed for income is that way. If we have a rising interest rate environment, the stocks that pay higher dividend, one would expect those to suffer more than stocks that paid smaller or no dividends at all. Because, for example, like a preferred stock, it's almost like a bond in perpetuity. You'll see great volatility with a rising interest rate and some downward pressure there. So, you know, if it were me at this stage, and I wanted to reduce my stock exposure, I would probably be looking at adding some additional funds to this and not add more money to the couple funds I already own.
I see. Which type might those be?
I think it's nothing wrong with having a balanced fund like you've got now. These are essentially low stock correlated balance funds. It might not be bad to look for another fund similar. But if it were me, I would just, because these are professionally managed funds which have the pluses and negatives, right? And I would tend to want to hedge my bets against the manager as well.
Okay.
That's what I would do.
Thank you very much.
All right, Lee. Good luck to you.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate the call. All right, so we've got Lee had called Handsome McLean. It sounds like you've been a listener for a while, so I appreciate that. David Showers joining us. David Showers, Handsome McLean's chief investment officer. David's been with us, I don't know, 15 years or something like that.
Let's call it 18.
Is it 18 years?
Yeah, but who's counting?
But David's counting. But it only feels like a couple. It's been so much fun here.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, David's our chief investments officer. And at Handsome McLean, every quarter, we do a video quarterly update where we talk about the markets, where things have gone, where things may be going, some things to watch out for. We just recorded our quarterly update. It will be going out this week. So if you currently receive Handsome McLean's newsletter, you'll receive it. And if you don't receive it and you'd like to receive it, simply go to moneymatters.com. moneymatters.com. Right at the bottom there, you can sign up for Handsome McLean's newsletter and get this. So, David, we just finished up the first quarter, 2016. What were some surprises to you?
Well, I think a couple things. On the heels of last year, you saw the Federal Reserve increase interest rates for the first time in a number of years, and really the market was forecasting about 4 interest rate increases for this year. And I think what we've seen in the first quarter is that we're not going to come anywhere close to 4 interest rate increases for the year. We'll probably be lucky to get 2 this year.
Is that you think that's primarily because a slowing economy or because increased rates, stock market went through chaos?
Yeah, I think it's a variety of things. I think we saw volatility come out of the increase in interest rates in the fourth quarter. We are looking at around a 1% gross domestic product growth rate in the fourth quarter of last year. We're tracking at probably a little bit less than 1% here in the first quarter. And I just think probably the Federal Reserve is somewhat tentative on raising interest rates too quickly and having the economy roll over. We don't have a lot of room. It's not like we're growing at 3%, and if they make a policy error, it drops us to 2. If you're growing at 1 and you have a policy error or a shock, whether it be a terrorist event or anything, any sort of exogenous shock from outside the U.S. economy, that could send us into a recession.
All right, so as far as it was quite interesting. We finished the quarter with the equity markets really at a pretty nice rally from their lows, right? I mean, it was looking like a bad quarter. And then suddenly the month of March, the markets just kind of, actually the latter part of February and through March, particularly the broad U.S. stock market had a tremendous increase. Why was that?
Well, I think a couple things. So I think, yeah, we had the worst January in, I think, 60 or 70 years. The market was down around 12% at its low for the year.
There goes January. So goes the year, is right. The old saying.
And I think you may have seen some exhaustion in the short term in selling. So there's some it doesn't, things just don't go down indefinitely. You just don't see markets continue to go down week after week at the same pace that we were going on. And then furthermore, you had a then dovish Fed, as we kind of described or discussed on today's quarterly video, a Fed that decided, you know what, we see more risks to the downside, or we're not as certain as what our upside forecast looked at, we're looking at last year. And so therefore, we're not going to be looking at raising interest rates at any time probably in the near future, other than possibly one, maybe two this year.
So from an investor standpoint, last couple of years have been, well, if you're broadly diversified, ho-hum. If you weren't, maybe you got lucky and made some money, or unlucky, maybe you owned Valiant stock, which fell almost 90% or something. It was a stock, darling, that took a tumble. And so let's assume you're broadly diversified, have a proper approach to your investments. What should you be looking at going forward?
Well, I think your time frame, number one, is very important. You know, we're 7 years. March 9th was the 7th year anniversary of the bottom in 2009. So we've had quite an expansion. We've seen the Dow rise from, you know, roughly 6,500 to approximately 18,300, you know, roughly a year ago, and maybe sitting at 17,7, 17,8 right now. That's been quite a run. So at some point, statistics and probability would suggest that we're due for some sort of more material downside than we've experienced in the last 7 years. Having said
that's nice to hear.
Well, there's business cycles and markets have cycles. And so being 7 years into an expansion, it's hard for me to envision, let's say, a replay of the last 7 years that we've had without a material downside event within that time period. It just happens. I don't know how to not expect that at this point in time. You've had earnings contract year over year. So 2014 to 2015, S&P 500 earnings went down by about $2 a share. Earnings, as you know, returns are going to fall.
One thing I appreciate about David Schauer, and the reason that we've enjoyed having him at Hanson McLean over the years and our chief investment officer, is the focus. And we certainly plan for the worst, but yet have our portfolios constructed so we still participate in rising markets and rising economies. It seems that most of our clients are at a stage in their life when it's not the time to take tremendous bets in their portfolio. They can't afford to lose half their accounts.
I think it's definitely a time to evaluate what is your downside threshold that you're willing to participate.
Yeah, how much can you stomach?
Absolutely. And I would go through that in a very rigorous
fashion. And everyone really should with their advisors should really go through what's the worst case scenario.
Yes.
Account. Yeah, I think that's really good and it's helpful. Anyway, we're out of time. David, I certainly appreciate you being with us on this day. Of course, David's our chief investment officer. And we have an in-depth quarterly webcast that we do. If you'd like a copy, just go to moneymatters.com. You can sign up for our newsletter. We're here every Saturday at this same time, or Sunday, depending on what station you're listening to. So make sure you tune in next week. Pat McLean should be back next week if he gets back on the plane and gets back in town. He's got to get back to work, doggone it. Anyway, this has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We'll see you next week.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.